So asking the users has been a core aspect of what we've been doing, and we feel it's really, really important. So for example, we've had a number of expert brainstorming sessions where we've got people together and say, okay, let's vision this. You know, what would a social networking site for learning design look like? What would it need to contain? What would the components be? We've gathered resources, we've gathered other tools that have been developed, we've tested them out. So we've got people to compare the different pedagogical planners and see what they like and don't like about them. And we've looked and worked with users to see what the problems are, they are having in terms of using these different tools. And constantly getting feedback, feedback, feedback. And of course, you know, we have assumptions about the things we're producing, and as always happens when we go out there, actually in reality what happens is often quite different. We found that kind of iterative process really, really useful. We've been doing that a lot within our own university, but we've also been doing it internationally at a number of workshops around the world. So the evidence base consists of a set of case studies we've gathered, 44 case studies across the university of the use of different tools in different subject areas. Interviews, we've collected 12 so far, where we've gone in depth at the design process. How are people going about the design? What problems are they having? How are they representing their designs? How are they sharing them? And Simon will talk more about that this afternoon. We're also following one course in depth from its conception through to delivery and seeing how the design process, the design life cycle, changes over that period of time. Visioning workshops, as I said, to try and forward think and think about innovatively about new tools, as well as more general workshops where we're putting forward where we've got to. Here's the set of resources we've got, here's some materials we've developed, here are some tools we found, see what you think and how do they meet your needs, and feeding that back into the process. The case studies have been gathered. They're available within our intranet, but we're also getting permission to make as many of them available as possible through the CloudWorks site. And they're giving us a good understanding of the use of tools in context, so how wikis are being used in the business school, or how e-portfolios are being used to support nursing, but also some of the issues that the teams have had in creating those activities. How have they worked as a team? How have they generated ideas? Where have they got ideas from? And so a key question we asked them was, when you start a new idea, when you've got a blank sheet and you're trying to create something, where do you get your ideas from? Do you go to particular websites? Do you go to particular people? Do you use particular pedagogical frameworks? How do you go about creating ideas? How do you share these? To try and understand the design process better. How do they represent them? But also what the barriers and enablers to the process are. And that, those have been really useful. The interviews are focused on five themes. The process of design, how are they going about the design process? How are they representing their designs? Are they drawing pictures? Are they typing them in text? Have they got mind maps or flow charts, etc.? Do they use kind of storyboarding? How are they representing their designs? And then how do they share those designs with others? And what kind of support do they have for the design process? And then what are the barriers to the process? And how do they evaluate? How do they know if their designs are successful? To what extent do they test out and evaluate the validity of the designs they produce? And those are giving us a kind of rich understanding, a much richer understanding of the design process and how it actually works. And a lot of those things are things you, there's nothing necessarily very surprising on this slide. The design is a very tacit process. There's a lot of serendipity, a lot of, oh, I just happened to come across this, or I talked to so-and-so and they gave me these ideas. And a lot in terms of the kind of constraints that limit the design, either institutionally in the way that things work or in terms of their subject and their pedagogy. But often, the designs are very creative, they're from the heart. And they often start, they often focus as a kernel of some great idea that they've been working on. The in-depth course evaluation is giving us an idea more of the whole life cycle, the whole design life cycle. The way in which you design at the very beginning of a course as it's being conceived is very different to the design process you're thinking of when you're just about to go live, or where you're halfway through delivering a course and you're looking at and seeing it having to change it. It's also giving us a better idea of the different granularities of design in terms of how design works at different levels, at a micro level of the creation of a learning activity up to holistic design at the whole course level. In our university, we work in teams, which is really useful because it's enabling us to get an idea of how design works across a number of different people and how you get negotiation and sharing of meaning between the team and how the team dynamics work. Barriers and enablers, again, are coming out very strongly. And finally, it's giving us a much clearer idea of the multifaceted and complex and dynamic nature of the design process. So all of these different ways of gathering data are giving us a better picture of the full design life cycle in terms of it being about starting with a vision, gathering information around that vision, instantiating it and assembling it, running it, delivering it, evaluating its success, adapting and going back round the cycle. And of course, that cycle isn't a simple linear round the route. It's more complex than that. And it also works at different levels. So there are a number of temporal lines, if you like, from course conception through to course delivery through to course refinement. So that design life cycle we're finding is different at those different stages. And therefore, different things, different tools are needed at different times. And that we think is really important. And finally, that the level of design is different. There's designing at a micro learning activity level. There's designing at what we would call a block, a set of activities. In our case, it's normally a sort of period of weeks or months, perhaps. So where you're aggregating a set of activities together, perhaps against a theme, and then up to the course level. So again, the design process, what you're thinking at those different levels will be different. Some snapshots from the interview. And I just picked out three aspects here, and Simon will talk about different things this afternoon. It's interesting to look at, for example, some of these quotes, which give an idea of the different ways in which people are recording and reflecting on their thoughts. You probably can't read those, can you? I'll read them out. Snapbook. So a scrapbook, one member of staff said, he uses a scrapbook, so he carries it around all the time with him, and he's kind of thinking about things and he jots things down. He says, it's not in words, not diagrams, it's just a dumping ground for thoughts, to capture thoughts. And somebody else, who obviously kind of is more visual in the way they work, said, I tend to sit and doodle a map. We'll draw the logic and flow of the course on paper and then go to compendium. Then the problem is sharing it. So making connections, and again, the Gliffy tools, Stephen, that you were talking with, you could imagine something like this might find that very useful. But also, again, relating to the different levels of granularity, we're seeing from the interviews evidence of sometimes the way in which people are thinking holistically across the course, and at other times where they're thinking at a much more micro level. I was building a sense of what the new course might be. We must remember to do X, or a URL of relevance. One of the difficulties is mapping the whole process. I've tried to approach the course design using a holistic approach. So what this interviewee was saying, she got to a point where she'd got lots of resources and activities and it was kind of coming together, but she kind of wanted to get a broader picture and see how it all fitted together. And similarly, in terms of mapping connections, starting from assessment strategies and learning outcomes, and then get an alignment. So this person was at a particular point in time thinking about their assessment strategies and how things fitted around there. And another interviewee, a list of words clustered into blocks, arrows, can you have clustered links to TMA's assignments? So thinking about the topics and the concepts and how they fit together. So the interviews are giving us a really interesting perspective on the design process and the different aspects of that design process. But there are contradictions in there as well, in terms of the process of design. Both design as a process, as something that's happening, that I'm engaged with, I'm doing, or design as a static product that I look at. And both those aspects are there in the data. In terms of capture, the difficulty of the balance between implicit and explicit. Design is a very tacit process in our heads, And making that more explicit is very difficult. And the minute you represent it in some way, in a LAM sequence, in a compendium diagram, in a textual case study, you're missing some of the aspects of it. And there's a real contradiction there. Representations, in terms of the value of different kinds of representation. What does it mean to represent a design in text? What does that give us? What does a diagram give you? And what are the values and benefits of both? And finally, this issue about the life cycle and the relationship between design being seen as a static thing that's produced, that's finalised, and actually the reality that it's a much more dynamic, fluid process, and we need to be able to record that more. And we feel that this data is giving us a better understanding of what we knew was a problem before, but we've actually got some now, if you like, some meat on the bones to understand it better. So we think there are a number of interconnected factors in this. At the micro level in terms of the activities, or if you're talking at the macro level in terms of the course level, there are three interconnected aspects of this that we need to be taking account of. The design is not about us as teachers designing, it's about a connection between the players within the system. So the designer, and whether that designer is a teacher or a student, will depend, it will vary, but also the support that's provided to go alongside that design. You can have a very good design, but if the system crashes, or if the tutor support is no good, a very good design can be ruined very quickly. And together those come in terms of what the student finally sees. And so we see the design as not about just the nature of the learning activity, but the connection between these parts. So the findings to date are that design is a messy, creative, iterative process. And we think that's key. And we don't want to lose that. That's actually a really important aspect of design. There are many different ways in which people go about design, often. One of our tutors said he spent a lot of money on coffee. He was buying people coffee a lot, because that's the way he was getting ideas. So Steve was desperate for a coffee, so maybe I should be quick. Sharing and reuse is valuable. People want to share. They really like the idea. They're always saying, give me case studies, give me examples. And yet you give them case studies, and they say, nah, that's not quite what I wanted. So they want it, but they don't know quite what to do with it. And there's no perfect design tool, and we feel that very strongly. You know, these different tools all have different strengths and weaknesses, but also the design life cycle is complex, it's multifaceted, it's different at different stages. It would be madness to think that one tool could work across that whole design life cycle. There are different levels in terms of granularity and focus, and that different representations, textual, visual models all have different values, and we need to better understand what those values are. And some of the work we've been doing with Compendium LD that Andrew will be talking about seems to suggest that visualization is something that's been seriously underutilized. Now, LAMS, of course, was one of the kind of key things in this area that actually broke the mold a long time ago. It was, you know, a kind of ahead of the game in terms of visualization. And I think we need to kind of do much more work on the process and value of visualisation. So with that in mind, I'm just going to give you a brief overview of the two tools we've developed to date. Compendium for visualising designs and for guiding the design process, and Cloudworks for guiding and sharing designs. Compendium LD is adapted from an existing software tool called Compendium, which was produced by our Knowledge Media Institute at the Open University. Compendium is a kind of mind mapping tool, but it's been particularly developed to try and support and foster argumentation and creativity. So we felt it fitted very well in terms of our aspiration for supporting design as a dialogue, as a creative process. This is what the screen looks like. You have a working area where you can drag on maps and create things. There are a set of existing icons which come with Compendium. For example, you can see at the top there's a little green one. You probably can't see it, but it's a question mark. So if you drag that across, you could put in a question like, what is greatness, for example? Then there's a light bulb. You could drag that across and say, it is this. So you can use the different icons in different ways to represent and develop your arguments and make connections between them. What we've done is we've adapted the tool and added in a set of specific icons to do with the design process. And we've adapted that from a taxonomy of learning design we developed a few years ago. So we've distilled out the essence of what a learning activity is, what it consists of, its components, the tasks the students are doing, the tools they're using, the resources they're using, the assessment they produce, the roles that are in there, etc. So we've got a set of icons that you can use for the design process. So what does it look like? So here is the LD icon set. We've got an icon for creating activities, a set of tasks, an icon for roles, an icon for individual tasks. Tasks we see as a smaller part. You put tasks together to get a bigger activity. We've got an icon for tools, one for resources, and then some other ones for assessment output and stopping, finishing a design at a particular point. So let's look at what that might look like. We adopt the kind of swim line metaphor that's being used a lot from UML. The AUTC project on learning design in Australia did a lot of work on using kind of swim line approaches, where you map out your design process against a set of things. So here we've got a line of student tasks, and you can see there's a little icon on there which is a task, and it says each student selects three countries. So that's the very first activity they're expected to do. Alongside it, there's another swim line which is a list of the things the student will be using to carry out that task, the resources they're using, the tools they're using, etc. And you can go on and add other swim lines of other activities. So here we've got a third one which says what the tutor is doing alongside this process.
That's when the coffee comes in.
What, when the tutor, go and have coffee, exactly, yes. Well, we're all getting desperate for coffee. No, I'm getting jittery now, so I'll go quick. So this is a design that was created by Paul Clark in the team, along with Simon. Paul's produced a very nice little video of this, which is about 12 minutes long, and I'll give you the link to it. So I'm just going to pick out some highlights of it. But they've done some very detailed work on kind of mapping a learning activity through the process. So here you can see, you can't see the details of it. I will, of course, make these slides available. But you can see this is the list of the tasks the students are doing. So each student selects three countries. They find and they retrieve data about these countries. They post the research to a group wiki. So it's saying what the students are doing at various stages in the activity. Alongside it, you've got the resources the students are using. So they've got a list of the countries as a resource. They've got the internet to link to for particular sites. And so then they start to build up. Here the green icons are particular tools they're using. So when it says the post the research to a group wiki, they post to the wiki their findings, or discuss in a forum, they discuss in a forum. And alongside, Paul and Simon found that when they were co-creating this, they started to find they also wanted to think about the learning outcomes. So they used one of the existing icons in Compendium to say, okay, what's the learning outcome and where does it map to particular activities? But also, they started to use the diagram as a dynamic shared process rather than a static product. So they started to ask questions. What do I need to be thinking about this stage? And later on, as they answered those questions, the questions disappeared. So Compendium LD as a process, a dynamic, evolving design process. We're also using the tool to build in some scaffolding and support. And Andrew will talk more about this later on. So here you can see another design. And what you can see here is that when the person drags over a role icon, a little drop-down menu gives them an option that says, here are some roles you might want to think about. Student, group of students, tutors, etc. You don't have to choose any of those. You can have whatever you like. You could have puppets if you wanted to. But the point is it gives you some ideas to think about. And likewise, as the sequence is developed, here you've got a user dragging over a tool icon, and now it says, select the tool you want to look at. A blog, an e-portfolio, a forum, instant messaging. So it gives you a selection of tools to think about, and you can go and you can find more information about those tools and how they're being used. So we're trying in the tool to build in in-situ, context-specific help on different aspects of the design. I have to put my hand up and say this is extraordinarily difficult, and I don't say we've got the answer, and I'm sure Marion will be nodding here because I know Phoebe struggled with this too. And we're trying to link into other tools that have developed extensive support for different aspects. But that's the aspiration. So here you can just see some other examples of what it starts to look like as you build things in. You can drag in Word files or PowerPoint or pictures or anything you want very easily in this tool. And here's another example which starts to look at some different conditioning. So you can start to build in different levels of complexity and information and use it as an evolving shared process of design. And we found in the workshops that this tool is very, very easy to use. And people do find it's useful, particularly when co-designing. And they find it helps them think differently. And it helps them be much more explicit about their design process. So just to walk you through a dynamic example, because one of the things we're also interested in is how we might represent finalised designs as a more interactive way. We've talked a little to James about the idea about having interactive land sequences, for example, in some ways. So here you've got an activity which is an inquiry-based learning activity, producing compendium, and this is to promote students to think about inquiry-based learning using mobile devices. So here you've got a number of swim lines again. You've got the teacher, tools, student, software, group, resources. The teacher starts by posing a question. So that just shows you the swim lines. They pose the question. That gets sent to a data projector. The student reviews the questions. That's their first task. They generate their responses. That's their second task. That goes back to the handheld devices, and then that goes back to the data projector. The software reads the responses. They cluster the responses in different ways depending on what the students have said. They pass that back to the data projector, etc. So you can see you've got a representation which gives you some feeling about running the design in real time. And again, you can start to see the boundaries of what is design and what is delivery in terms of the student enacting it, what those might be. Because you could imagine something like this could be given to the students as a way of running through a design in some way. So the second tool I want to talk about briefly relates to the aspects of sharing of designs, which is a site we've created called Cloudworks. We've got a prototype of this running, and we're currently at the moment got a designer trying to create a really, really nice jazzy interface for this. It's running at the moment in Drupal, and very much what we've got is a starter for 10. And one of the exercises I'd like to do tomorrow afternoon is explore with those of you who come to the session more about where we might go with this, how we might build in very many of the aspirations you were talking about, Stephen, in terms of where learning design might go into something like this. So at the moment, the way we've got it designed is it's got four main kinds of things, objects in it. So we're using it to find and share designs, and we want to apply the best of Web 2 to this, to really say what I said before, why have things like Facebook and Ning and other social networking sites, why have Flickr and YouTube been so successful? They've been successful because they've met a real need. You don't go and put up your slides and SlideShare because somebody tells you to. You do it because it's useful and because there's peer pressure, because people say, can you put your slides up, please, and SlideShare? And in fact, I got some rude comments. I was thinking about, Stephen, you're saying about Audacity. Somebody said, yeah, nice slides, but means nothing because I can't hear what you're saying. So that's got me thinking, well, I've got to do the audio recording. So there's a kind of peer pressure and a need. So it's trying to apply the same kind of principles to this. Why have learning object repositories not worked? They've not worked because they're terribly worthy but dull. Who's going to spend hours tagging up metadata for what purpose? So that's the kind of aspiration of where we want to go with this. So four kind of objects. Cloudlets, which are little designs. Designs, which are bigger designs. Resource bank of different resources to do with designs. and design tools specifically for dealing with the design process. And I must put Gliffy in, it occurs to me. So cloudlets are essentially little designs, because one of the things we felt intuitively, but also has been backed up by the evidence we've gathered through the interviews and the workshops, is actually how do designs really get shared in practice? Where do I as a teacher get ideas from? I get ideas because, as I've just done with watching Stephen, I saw Stephen do the audacity and I thought, oh, that's a good idea, I'll nick that, I'll do that there. Or somebody says to you, I ran a really great session last week, I got students into two groups and I got one to argue this and the other to argue that. Now, in a sentence, that's enough. I don't need to know the details of the software, but that's enough as a teacher to get me thinking, oh, I could do that with my class in these ways. So often, very often, practice is shared by little kind of craft moments that get passed from one to the other. And we felt that was what was missing with a lot of what we've been doing with design. We've been concentrating on producing perfect big designs, and maybe we need to go back to the practice-based aspects of teaching and just get that sharing. So we came up with the notion of cloudlets as little designs. And cloudlets consist of titles, little descriptive titles, so you can see e-portfolio and assessment of learning objects, assessment of group learning, audio feedback using MS Word. In a sentence, that gives you a pretty good idea of what that activity is about. But also, they're short and they're sweet, so they're not not complex. Two lines, using a wiki for developing meeting agendas. Rather than send out a call for agenda items for a meeting via email or other communication tools, use your wiki to collaboratively build agendas. Great, that's fine, that's useful. I can take that and I'll use it in different ways. So we're tagging them with very simple tags, and we're letting the users choose the tag just in the way that Flickr and YouTube and others do as well. So we're giving the control over. We're thinking there's more chance that people will want to buy into this and put into this if they can see benefit and if it's easy to do. Now, we haven't, you know, these are big ifs. We've got to test all these things out. And we may come back in a year's time or not and say we failed, but that's the kind of aspiration behind this. I wish I hadn't said that now. Designs are more complex or more extensive, if you like, so they provide more detail. They're like cloudlets, but they've got much more detail. They might provide more information, but we're also letting people upload them in any format. So somebody can upload a design as a Word file, as an Excel sheet, as a compendium LD diagram, something from a LAMS output from Phoebe or the London Pedagogic Planner, anything you like, it doesn't matter. They can upload it in any way they want to. And also, they usually provide additional information, further links. And we'd like to go further and have some of these be more interactive. And actually, some of the kind of things you were talking about shared notions, and you might have people adapting them within that space. But we're not there yet. The third kind of object that's in there is the resource bank. So, for example, learning objects. We've got a link to the Globe repository. Links to open educational resources, links to information on tools, case studies and ideas, networks that might be useful, anything you like, any of the resources that might be useful to do with design. And it's up to people to choose what they want to put up there. And whatever you put in gets labelled as you having put it in. So there's also an element of expert user here. So if, you know, sadly, if you look at my entry, it shows I'm a complete learning design bore, because all the stuff I've put in are general ones about tools for learning design, etc. But if you're an expert in history, and you put in 50 things related to history, then that kind of automatically tags you in the system as something who's got an expertise to add in that. And approaches to design, thinking about design differently. We're also looking at putting in repositories and sites that are focusing more explicitly on the learning design side, for example, the AUTC site in Australia, any objects at all which relate to being useful in terms of the design process. One of the things we really want to do is look at new ways of